I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe, says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I ain't dead. Says Joe, but I ain't dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize. Went on to organize. San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers fight and organize, it's there you'll find Joe Hill. It's there you'll find Joe Hill. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
You're listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Portland. I'm Joe Clement, your host for today. That was Clayton Morgeridge, accompanied by Ernie Tong, singing Joe Hill by Alfred Hayes and Earl Robinson. It's one of a number of tunes made or otherwise sung famously by Paul Robeson that Clayton liked to sing. I first met Clayton 12, 13 years ago when I posted a want ad on Craigslist for participants in a continental philosophy reading group that I wanted to start. I wanted to get outside of the academic circles that I had been in. Clayton was one of the 15 or 20 people who had responded to that and showed up for the first meeting, and after several more meetings, I wasn't able to continue the group, and we lost touch. Fast forward to the summer of 2009, and Facebook tells me that there's this person that I may know. It was Clayton. I can't exactly remember the timing of it, but I reached out to him and reconnected and found out that he had kept a small group of the original participants of the reading group I started. And because I was working a job where I could sit and listen to the radio, I decided to check out the show that Clayton told me he was involved with on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'd never really listened to KBOO before, you know? I had thought that it was something like the cable access TV equivalent of the radio, and had been listening to NPR for years, thinking that that was progressive. And then I started listening to The Old Mole and KBOO because of Clayton, and I was hooked. By January of 2010, I had been starting to come to the Mole's monthly planning meetings. I'd gone to volunteer orientation, shadowing under the then regular engineers for the Old Mole. Clayton also took me under his wing to teach me how he posted the show, cutting up the individual segments, making them their own thing, putting in all the links and the pictures. For a while, I lived down the street from Clayton in Selwood, and to my surprise, One of my building mates was a student of Clayton's and had traveled abroad with him. Clayton lived a long life and touched many people. He sung, he wrote, he traveled, he thought, he contributed to the Old Mole Variety Hour for most of the last 30 years. And with that, I'd like to turn to a piece from almost 5 years ago that he wrote. It is a commentary and a bit of a reading about how the American Civil War was a war over property relations. A war that's never really ended, but has gone underground and continues to this day in our political and economic institutions.
Well, the guiding star of political action, from the Old Mole's point of view, is the democratic control and ownership of the wealth and resources required to produce our lives. That is, everything that falls under the heading of capital. Pretty much all of this capital is now, directly or indirectly, under the control of the wealthiest tenth of the top 1% of the population, or in the U.S., about 320,000 people. It is their interest in maintaining and expanding their power that dictates what the rest of us have to do, how we have to work in order to live. Genuinely radical political action always aims at chipping away at and eventually abolishing the power of the capitalist class and the basis of that power, the private ownership of capital. The goal is a world in which we all together decide how we shall live. This is what revolution is, fundamental change in the relations of property, and therefore of the conditions of labor. Now, to appreciate what it takes to make such a revolution, it is worth looking back at what has been called the Second American Revolution, the Civil War, and the abolition of slavery. With the end of the war and the passage of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, the right to own human beings as property was abolished. The result was that what had been property, almost 4 million enslaved people, valued at over $3 billion, or 18% of the total of all U.S. wealth, suddenly ceased to be property, and all that wealth vanished from the economy. This was a revolution more radical than the first one of 1776 because it worked a fundamental change in property relations. Let's look back at the debate over slavery and the principle of private property in the decades leading up to the Civil War. The Fifth Amendment to the Constitution declares that no one can be deprived of their property without due process of law. Now, did that mean that the nation could not deprive enslavers of their property in human beings? Did it mean government could not prohibit moving slaves into new territories? The main issue in the 1830s and 40s was whether the government had the right to stop the expansion of slavery into new territories by admitting new states to the Union as free states. Those who profited from slavery, not only those who owned and drove enslaved people in the South, but the many northern investors in slaves and cotton, knew that slavery could only thrive if it kept expanding to keep up with the world market in cotton. Abolitionists and others who opposed slavery also understood this and hoped to end it by confining it to where it already existed and by repealing the laws that required northern officials to return escaped slaves to their enslavers. In 1836, abolitionists were calling for Congress to use its power over federal territory to end the slave trade and even to ban slavery itself in the District of Columbia. Here is how the South responded, as described by historian Edward Baptist in his book, The Half Has Never Been Told, Slavery and the Making of American Capitalism. South Carolina Senator John C. Calhoun responded to these anti-slavery demands with a speech that outlined a foundational idea. He told the Senate that the Fifth Amendment limited federal power over individuals' property by decreeing that no one could be deprived of his property without due process of law. Calhoun now proceeded to build a sweeping principle on the back of this sentence.
Due process, he insisted, could mean only trial by jury of a specific criminal. What the abolitionists proposed was the opposite of due process, legislative fiat that erased the property claims of a whole class of people. And, said Calhoun, were not the slaves of this district property, and were not their enslavers a whole class of property owners? Presumably, Congress could not prevent people from buying or selling said property, since salability is usually one of property's characteristics. Baptist goes on, Calhoun was stating an idea that would eventually be known as the doctrine of substantive due process. The due process requirements to which the Constitution referred could not be fulfilled simply by passing a law, for a law that invaded the rights of property owners ran up against something too fundamental for procedure to alter. In Calhoun's vision, the Fifth Amendment was a geological outcropping that confirmed that beneath the Constitution lay an underlying substantive tectonic plate of natural law that allowed owners to hold and use property. Now, in 1847, Calhoun went on to argue that the Fifth Amendment denied Congress any right to require that new states outlaw slavery, complaining, quote, resolved, that the enactment of any law which should directly or by its effects deprive the citizens of any of the states of this Union from emigrating with their property into any of the territories of the United States would unjustly discriminate between citizens of slave states and citizens of free states, and would therefore be a violation of the Constitution. He implied that the federal government should actually pass laws to enact the institution of slavery on federal territory, for to do otherwise would be to deprive individual slave owners and indeed all Southern whites, who were, after all, potential property owners, of their rights to emigrate with their property. End of quote. Well, it took a civil war and a constitutional amendment to remove human beings from the category of private property and free them from the direct ownership of capital. But capital still owns and controls the wealth enslaved people created, and it continues to expropriate that so-called free labor today and to dictate the conditions of labor and life. To protect the rights of capital, the principle of substantive due process protecting private property that was laid down by Calhoun is very much with us today. As Edward Baptiste writes, after the Civil War, pro-big business legal thinkers from the North would, ironically enough, take up a version of Calhoun's idea. From the 1890s through the New Deal era, the Supreme Court repeatedly used substantive due process to strike down legislative attempts to regulate Gilded Age industry, protect workers' rights, or break up monopolies. Substantive due process shaped and continues to shape the political economy of the United States in enduring ways. End of quote. A good case can be made that reparations should be paid to the descendants of slaves for the wealth that was beaten and sweated out of them. But the wealth owned and controlled by the very wealthiest families rules our world to the extent that a recent study of political power concluded that the U.S. is a plutocracy. Expropriating that wealth and putting it in public hands, that is the next revolution. Abolishing the private ownership of human beings was not easy. Neither will be the abolition of private property in the wealth our labor creates. I'm Clayton Morgridge for the Old Mole Variety Hour.